Six Music.
BBC Radio, Six Music Documentaries.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to The First Time on Six Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. My guest today genuinely changed not just the music world, but popular culture as a whole. Her work has had a huge influence on generations of artists and helped shape what we think of as conceptual modern art. But when she married John Lennon, she helped take his music in new, original ways and brought the avant-garde into the mainstream in a way that no one had ever done before. Something that made her hugely unpopular with those who wanted Lennon to remain a conventional musician. But to ignore the importance of my guest is to ignore the very things that made John Lennon so brilliant: his love of risk, the experimental, and the confrontational. Now aged 83, her status as someone who stood shoulder to shoulder with Lennon is universally recognised, but she's also respected for being a peace campaigner and a determined, uncompromising artist in her own right with a huge creative legacy. My guest on The First Time this week is, of course, Yoko Ono. Here Yoko talks about her earliest musical influences as a child in Tokyo in the late 30s, moving to New York and collaborating with classical avant-gardists like John Cage in the 50s, and her earliest performance art, including the famous Cut piece, first staged in 64, where Yoko sat motionless while members of the public cut off her clothes with scissors. She also recalls, very graciously, her first meeting with John Lennon at the Indica Gallery in London in 1966. How the world reacted to the music she and John started making almost immediately, and the writing of songs like Give Peace a Chance and I'm Your Angel. And also how she feels about the way people's perceptions of her have changed over the years. But I started by asking Yoko, as I do with all my guests, when was she first aware of music, which was being taught piano at just 4 years old?
Well, you know, I think many, many people have experienced the same thing in those days. You know, the parents are sort of say, now you better play well, or something like that.
Did you enjoy the piano?
Well, I was not very good. The reason why I was not very good may be my excuse, but my father was so strict. And when I was 2.5 years old, I went to San Francisco to meet him. And the first thing he did was, show your hands. Well, this part has to be long enough or something, or octave.
To scan the scale.
You know, I was a tiny little thing, you know. So at that instant, my hands just kind of shrunk back.
What kind of thing did you have to play? Classical pieces?
It was just a bayer and, you know, all the sort of rehearsal stuff, you know.
Can you remember buying your first album or your first record that you owned? What was it?
Luckily, maybe, I never had to buy records because, you know, they come to us, you know. No, I don't remember buying records when I was a young girl. What I knew about music is my father playing the piano and my mother playing Asian instruments. They were totally different from each other. I was sent to this early music school called Jiugakuen, which is called Freedom Garden, I suppose, in Japan. And many of them became serious artists, actually, serious musicians that are known in Japan, kind of thing. I was not one of them. But it was a very interesting education that the homework was, for example, you're supposed to collect in your mind all the sounds that you heard that day.
That's nice.
And put it together or something. And the teacher sometimes let us listen to the clock ticking, dung, dung, dung. And then afterwards, said, how many was there? You don't know how many it was in a way. Well, you do. So you have to go back to it and repeat in your mind. So it was all like very conceptual games, you know. And you start to learn about sounds and notations and music through that. So instead of just saying, okay, do, re, mi, pa, after, pa, it's good. No, it's not like that. It was like, okay, just let me hear what you have to remember or what you remember. And then you have to remember it in your mind.
When you first found the kind of avant-garde in New York, what drew you there? Because it became such a creative environment.
I didn't even know. What did we use the word avant-garde? Yes, I suppose it was convenient to use that word for radio people, maybe. But I was into classical music and was trying to create my own music, you know, to get out of that one, you know. So that came very naturally to me. I was conceptual from the beginning, it seems like. And one of the reasons is because of, it's a mixture of reasons. One, I was shy and I didn't particularly want to express myself loud. And also, it's in a kind of environment where it was easy to live in a conceptual world.
Because you did some really interesting work with people like John Cage. When did you first meet him?
Well, I just felt in those days I was still sort of moving from one to another, growing period, you know. Mm. And but it's very strange because I was, it's not strange because my father, and that's what, in certain way I was avoiding it. And that's why all the kind of music I made came from that, I suppose.
I have to ask you about Cut Piece, very famous piece of conceptual art. When was the first time you did Cut Piece and what was people's reactions to it? Can you remember?
Yeah, I did that first in Kyoto and it was a little bit scary, I thought. But it wasn't that scary because I have this habit of immediately going inside myself. Mm. So when I was on the stage and I placed a pair of scissors and said, come out and cut whatever you want or something, I immediately went inside myself. Well, let's say half inside myself, because a guy just jumped on the stage with a scissors, a pair of scissors, like that. And everybody's going, oh, what's going to happen? But in my mind, it was like a peripheral vision that did not have the sharpness of reality. Isn't that amazing? But then the thing is, you know, she's settled down with this kind of posture. And we all knew that she was probably a dancer making that, you know, posture. So she was not dangerous or anything. But that's how it started. And then I went to Tokyo. And in Tokyo, I did a cut piece. The third one was in New York City. The fourth one was in London. And then much later, I did in Paris, you know.
Yeah. It's still a really powerful image, the image of you sitting there.
It's interesting that, you know, it's one of the most probably powerful work of mine. But for me, it was just hiding.
Withdrawing into yourself.
Well, hiding my emotion as well. I did not call my work conceptual in the beginning. I know that it was conceptual, but, you know, I don't like labeling so much.
People say I'm cool. Every day I thank God that I'm such a cool chick baby. Something inside me, something inside me died that day. People say I'm cool. Yeah, I'm a cool chick baby. Every day I thank God that I'm such a cool chick baby. When I'm with people, I thank God I can talk hip when I'm crying inside. When I'm with friends, I thank God I can light a cigarette when I'm choking inside. Shades of sleep. was like an accident, part of growing up. People tell me there's something inside me, something inside me died that day. Strange place, people seem talking in foreign words. And something inside me, something inside me died that day.
First time on Six Music with my guest Yoko Ono, and that was the rather brilliant Death of Samantha from Yoko's 1973 solo album Approximately Infinite Universe. The album was produced by Yoko's husband John Lennon, who also played the brilliant guitar on the track. But we're getting ahead of ourselves, as in a few minutes we'll go back to the 7th of November 1966, the Indica Gallery near Duke Street in Mayfair in London, where Yoko is preparing for a new exhibition, Unfinished Paintings and Objects, which would open the following day.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
I'd love to ask you about your first impressions of meeting John. What did you first think when you met him?
Do you really want to know that? I think that there are many times that I have spoken about it, but okay. So I had this exhibition of mine in Indica Gallery, and I was preparing for it, and students from St. Martin's, I think John Dunbar brought them, his very wise thing to do, because these were would-be artists or artists, you know, and they all helped us to sort of put it together. And I was thinking, okay, and then the door opened and John Dunbar came in with a friend of his. And I said, what is he doing? Didn't I tell him that I don't want anybody to get in here until I'm ready, you know? But I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to scream about it. It's probably his close friends or a friend or something. So, and they kind of went downstairs. And so I thought, what am I going to do? Okay, I better go pull up them. And I went downstairs and I saw them standing in front of the Harmonium piece. But I didn't go near them or anything. I mean, it was just, you know, far away. That is the kind of person I am. You know? I don't go, eek! So, and then John Dunbar noticed me and said, oh, this is the artist, you know. And sort of introducing to John, instead of saying, this is Yoko Ono, this is the artist. And this is, and he was mumbling John's name to probably protect him, you know. But to me, it was nothing. I mean, it was another person, you know.
Yeah.
So I said, hello, being polite. And he was just standing in front of this blank piece of wood, which was my, because nobody had hammer nail in yet.
So there's nothing on it yet.
And, but very seriously, he was, ha ha, you know, this is, what is that block up, you know, wood? No, He was looking at it like, And he said, could I hammer nail it? So I said, well, if you pay, was it 5 shillings or 12 shillings? But you can. And he didn't say anything. He sort of, could I hammer nail in? I just forgot exactly how he said it, but what he meant was, is it all right to hammer nail in conceptually? So I said, yes, you know. But to me, I thought, this is interesting that he's playing the same game as I was playing it.
Love is real. Real is love.
The night before, I thought, well, this is an opening of an important show for me, but how am I going to be able to sell it or to get some money out of it, you know, because it's just conceptual. So I thought, oh, well, we can do this. I can collect the admission fee. And I thought, great idea. So I was going to do that. And so when he said, well, could I? And I thought, okay, this is where I say it. You know, if you pay 5 shillings, you can. And I thought, wow, this is a great sort of step forward, you know, that I'm doing something that I've never done before to make it into a showcase to pay to see.
Did you feel something straight away?
No, I'm, as usual, I was more interested in the format that I discovered and things like that, you mm-hmm. know. But then he immediately said, I don't remember the sequence, but what he wanted to know was, where's the back piece? Because he heard that people get in the bag and everything. So I said, well, that's the one. Well, it's not very exciting. So the black bag was on a stand or something. And then he said, what is the event of today, because you know it's like bag pieces not seems too interesting. So I said, this is the event, and I just showed him a card in which I wrote breathe. So he said, like this? So I thought, oh, okay, you know. And then he saw the apple piece and just grabbed the apple and had a bite. And I was so upset about that, you know, because I'm an artist, and instead of respecting my work, you know, to take a bite out of it. So obviously I looked furious. And he noticed that and he said, I'm sorry. It's like he wasn't saying I'm sorry, but he was just, you know, upset about it and put the apple back on the stand. You know?
That was O Yoko, taken from John Lennon's Imagine album in 1971, which is clearly about my guest this week on the first time, Yoko Ono.
Six Music.
This is BBC Radio Six Music.
Six Music.
Standing in the dark at Southampton, trying to get to Holland or France. The man in the match says, you've got to go back. You know they didn't even give us a chance. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Finally made the plane into Paris, honeymooning down by the Seine. Peter Brown called to say, you can make it okay. You can get married in Gibraltar near Spain. Christ, you know it ain't easy. You know how hard it can be. The way things are going, they're gonna crucify me. Drove from Paris to the Amsterdam Hilton, talking in our beds for a week.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on Six Music where we look at the key first moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is Yoko Ono, and you just heard The Ballad of John and Yoko by the Beatles, which is as self-explanatory a song title as you could ever want. And it was clear from the very moment that John met Yoko at the Indica Gallery in 1966 that nothing would ever be the same again, and they became virtually inseparable.
The point is, it was like a miracle that happened, because everything was... When you think about it now, everything was set right. For instance, he was in Abbey Road studio, and he just dropped in to see the show. And Abbey Road is three Abbey Road. Three is music number. And where Indica Gallery was six Mason Square or something. Six is a number of love. So the music came to... You know, the number love. Isn't that amazing? Even on that level.
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John?
Yoko?
John!
Yoko!
John!
Yoko!
John!
Yoko!
Two Virgins album that you made, it's such a brave thing to do to release that record.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The cover especially, obviously. But the music, it was such a jump to what anybody was expecting. Do you remember it coming out?
Well, I know that what I did then in terms of music was quite different from people being used to. But he understood it. That surprised me.
Why?
Oh, because nobody else did. My experience with music is more conceptual. The fact that I was so different made it happen with my songs that it came out all right.
First Plastic Ono Band concert, which was 1969. Don't
Where was it? 69?
At the Toronto Rock and Roll Festival. And you did Don't Worry Kyoko, and it's just, it's a great performance. What, can you remember that first gig?
No, I remember doing Don't Worry Kyoko. Don't Worry Kyoko was about my daughter. I never thought there was pop music or rock. I mean, it's just music, and was a good experience. It is a very good experience. But that's what I was thinking. What I'm interested in about my music is very different from what other people are interested in. Well, I think they like to see something that is comforting.
Your music's not comforting, is it?
I don't think so. Everything that we did was very, very close to our hearts. And we got criticism about that, you know, like, you guys are supposed to be artists, but, you know, it's all very personal. And so Johnny really reacted to that and said, what's wrong being personal? He was very real, and both of us were very real, actually. And even a drop of reality, a drop of truth, you know, goes a long way. But we had it.
Give Peace a Chance has become so powerful, not just as a song, but something that was seemed very casual as now, to this day, people still talk about it. The signs, the song, have got this life. It seemed just like a little moment, and it'll be played forever. That must feel wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that great? John and I did not really accumulate anything worldly, but we had incredible, incredible richness of life that was given to us, you know. Isn't that amazing?
Two, one, two, three, four. Everybody's talking about bag, is a tag, is a slag, is a mag, is a mag, is a tag, is a this, is a that, is a this, is a this, is a that.
Seems like you're so loved now, you know, people really appreciate your work, and maybe in the past it was easy for people to criticize you because of what they thought you were. How's that shift been?
Well, thank God that they criticized me instead of ignoring me. In other words, my work was criticized, not ignored. Can you imagine if everybody was saying, "She's so good, she's so good"? I'd be dead by now.
You could see, like, people like Elvis Costello and the B-52s starting to name-check you as a musician for the first time, maybe. It must have been satisfying.
Well, it's to do with being a musician and being a writer because I started as a poet, and so I'm very much into words, and that's where I was, my mind was going always.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the kind of people that you were talking about, they're great artists, but I don't know, the emphasis might have been different. I really don't know. Some people enjoyed it, probably, I hope, and some people didn't like it.
I also wanted to ask about I'm Your Angel, it's such a beautiful song.
Thank you.
Do you remember recording that one and writing it?
Well, I kind of like it, but I mean, there's so many other songs that I like too, but the kind of songs that I wrote, most of them were, especially in approximately infinite universe time or after that too, but kind of had a little shade in it, you know. But I'm Your Angel was really the tops when we were so happy together. And there are very few songs like that. No, but you know, one of the things I never told about, and maybe it doesn't mean very much, but John was starting to feel that, you know, he's going to be 40. You know, the usual thing that all of us feel for.
Yes.
So he was saying, Jesus, I can't believe I'm going to be 40. I mean, he was saying things like that, you know, in the middle of the night, you know. So I just wanted to make him feel better.
Yes, I'm your angel. I'll give you everything in my magic power. So make a wish and I'll let it come true for you. Gave me everything I ever wanted from life. Have I made a wish? And is that why I have you? Tra-la-la-la-la. We believe in pumpkins, they turn into princess. And frogs, they turn into prince. We believe in moons that smile to us when we hurry home before the midnight strikes. Tra-la-la-la-la. Yes, I'm so pretty, you're so dizzy, and we're so happy. Every day, let's make a wish and let it come true for us. Tra-la-la-la-la. I'm in your pocket, you're in my locket. And brings our shadows together. Tra-la-la-la-la. Yes, our hearts are one, our bodies two, and it's so good. Every time we make a wish and let it come true for you too.
So much of your music has become regarded better and better as the years have gone on. It's like people now kind of reevaluated it, you know? Something like Walking on Thin Ice now sounds, you could release that today and it would sound very, very current. Can you feel over the past 15, 20 years, people kind of going back and going, actually, there was some really good music. Could you feel that?
Well, you know, Walking on Thin Ice, I know why it wasn't accepted right away, because right after we created, he died, you know. So we were more concerned about that. But I was both of us actually, was hung up on the when I'm saying, I knew a girl, you know, from then. So in other words, it was not just an ordinary song. There was a, you know, format-wise, it's an ordinary song, but then attaching that makes a big difference. And when I did that, John said, from now on, we should do that all the time. You know, like, it was great.
Thank you.
What do you think people's first impression is of you when they meet you?
I don't know.
What do you think? Because you make playful art, but it's also very serious art at the same time. You're kind of both things, you know?
Well, reality is always complex like that, you know. It's never one thing. People are surprised about me anyway, so I'd rather that they would understand me and stop being surprised.
How would you describe your art and music then?
Well, truth, that's big. I'm not concerned so much about how people take things of my work.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about the perfection of it, or how it affects, but how it is for me. I'm just having a normal average life.
It's not a normal average life.
It's true. I don't consider it as anything special. It's nothing to be impressed or not be impressed. I think that it's my life. I feel very lucky. Yeah. I'm not concentrating on my mind to that at all. If I did, I'd go crazy.
What's the last song we should play? We'll play a piece of music at the end of this interview. What should we play?
Nothing.
And I can't think of a more conceptual way of ending a show than just silence. And that silence was the choice of my guest here on The First Time this week, Yoko Ono.
Six Music.
Yeah. This morning at 11,
Keris Matthews.
At 8,
Radcliffe and Marconi.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
Right now, it's Chris Hawkins.